Well, I'm going to start with a gruesome question, sorry. But here it is. Have you ever come face to face with death? Have you ever looked at death in the face? Have you ever seen a corpse? Dead, lifeless. I have a number of times, and it's not a nice experience, is it? It's actually terrible. I used to work, when I was studying at uni, I used to work at Charlie Gardner Hospital as one of the guys who transported those huge big green bins on wheels from the wards to the garbos, to the rubbish men. They would empty them and then I'd take new bins back to the wards. And actually, it might not sound it, but this was an amazing job because I got to drive these little electric cars around and then put the bins like a train. You're basically driving a train around. Quite fun. I mean, it's not the best job in the world, but it is quite amazing. Now, what you might not know about Charlie Gardner Hospital is there's tunnels. So you're driving an electric car and there's tunnels. How amazing is that? There's tunnels for access down underneath the hospital, and my job was to take the bins as I'd got them into a train, up through one of the tunnels, up around across the car park, and into where the garbos would deal with them. Wouldn't touch the rubbish, which was even better. They would have to deal with that, and then I'd come back down. Now, one of the roads, the little tunnel roads, drove straight past the morgue where the dead bodies were. And this one day, I was driving past the morgue. Usually the big double doors would be closed, but today they were open. And I had a choice to make as I'm driving my electric car past the morgue, because I had to actually stop next to the morgue. And there they are, the doors are open. Do I look or not? Obviously I looked, I'm a 20-year-old. I'm gonna look. And what did I see? Dead body after dead body on trolleys. I can still see it. Some were bagged and some were not. And I've got to tell you, for a 20-year-old, that was extremely terrifying. I remember the feeling. It was this terrible, sinking, awful feeling. But it was also very helpful because that day I felt something of the weight of death. I'd felt it a bit already because I'd lost some loved ones early in my life. But that day, death became very real to me. Today we find ourselves in quite possibly the most pessimistic and depressing part of the Bible, Ecclesiastes chapter 9. And the topic is death. And today, God is going to speak about two views of death, two worlds. One is from the viewpoint of the world we see, the one we live in. And one is from the viewpoint of the God who made it all. In the book of Ecclesiastes, the teacher, quite possibly King Solomon, is setting out to test a theory. He's setting out to test the theory that under the sun, there is no meaning to life. So he starts the whole book and he says, meaningless, meaningless, everything is meaningless. And that word, as you probably know by now, means vapor, mist, the thing that comes off your mouth on a cold day, just whoosh, gone. And the term under the sun, which you probably already know too, means life looking out there. You just take a look out at life without reference to a personal God interrupting. If you looked at life, can you make sense of it? That's life under the sun. If you didn't have a special word from God, you knew God was there, but you haven't got a personal relationship with him. That's life under the sun. So he sets out to test his theory on all sorts of areas of life. And he's tested wisdom and education. He's tested self-indulgence and pleasures. He's tested work and rest. He's tested money, riches, possessions, prosperity. And now we come to death. Two things he shows us. Firstly, all people die in sin. Every person, whoever was and ever is, no matter who you are, what you're like, every person dies. He tells us really what we already know. Have a look from verse 2 of Ecclesiastes 9. all share a common destiny. The righteous, the wicked, the good, the bad, the clean, the unclean, those who offer sacrifices, those who don't. As is with the good man, so with the sinner. As is with those who take oaths, those who don't. This is the evil in everything that happens under the sun. The same destiny overtakes all. So no matter who you are, what you've done, good, bad, moral, immoral, religious, irreligious, if you look out there at life under the sun, every person dies. And verse 6 makes it even clearer. Their love, their hate, their jealousy, all are gone. Never again will they have any part in anything that happens under the sun. As a 20-year-old, when I saw those dead bodies lined up in the morgue, it was very confronting. No 20-year-old in Perth, Western Australia thinks they're going to die. No 40-year-old in Perth, Western Australia thinks they're going to die. I know 70-year-olds who are still in denial. But that day, I realised that's going to be me. And that will be you too. Verse 3 tells us this is the evil in everything. It literally says this is the evil of all evils. It's the grand poobah of evils. But it gets worse. Have a look at the second half of verse 3. Turns out, humans are utterly evil while they live too. The hearts of men are full of evil and madness in their hearts while they live. And afterwards they join the dead. So under the sun, people, all people, are full of evil, sin all the time. All people die in sin. There is no person who ever was or ever will be who can stop their own death. There is no person who ever lives who lives without sin. Which one of us can say, no, Matt, hang on, I'm not a sinner. No, Matt, I haven't turned away from the God who made me. No. Well, you come and talk to me later. I really want to hear from you if you're this person. I haven't lived for myself as my own boss. No. That's all of us, isn't it? And that means we all die in sin. The teacher kind of throws his hands in the air at this point and goes, ah, stuff it. He gets really sarcastic and bitter. Did you notice it? Verse 4. Anyone who's among the living has hope. Even a live dog is better off than a dead lion. Living isn't that good, but it's better than being dead. And then verse 5, the living know that they're going to die. Again, it's sarcastic. There's a bitterness creeping in. The dead know nothing. There's no reward. Not even a memory of them. But the alive, they know one thing. That they're going to die. And that is life under the sun. If you just look out there and try to make sense of life from the viewpoint of death, how do you see death? All people die in sin. So how do we respond to that? Just one long, depressing line heading towards the morgue. What are we going to do? Well, here's the Perth option. Make the most of it. Eat, drink, and be merry. And that's exactly what the teacher says. Have a look at verse 7. Go, eat your food with gladness and drink your wine and joyful hearts, for now is the time God favours you. This is the time when you've got your moment. Always be clothed in white. Always anoint your head with oil. Enjoy your life with your wife whom you love all the days of this what? Meaningless life that God has given you. Where? Under the sun, for this is the lot in life, your toils and labour under the sun. If this is it, this is Perth life is it, you better make the most of it. Eat, drink and be merry. Buy the best clothes in white. Spare nothing that brings you joy. Anoint your head with oil. Have a joyful time. That's the Perth life, isn't it? Enjoy it while you've got it. Life under the sun, all people die. But there's another thing, it gets worse. Chance rules an uncertain life. Did you see it in verse 11? He sees something else. I have seen something else. Have a look there. The race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, nor does food come to the wise, or wealth to the brilliant, or favor to the learned, but time and chance happen to them all. Moreover, no man knows when his hour will come. As a fish caught in a cruel net, or birds are taken in a snare, so men are trapped by evil times that fall on them unexpectedly. Life under the sun, things just happen. It's ruled by chance. You can't control it, and things fall on you unexpectedly. Teacher brings out five examples. Did you see it? The fast, the strong, the clever, the rich, the learned. The fast and the strong people don't always win, do they? Race isn't always to the swift, battle to the strong. The cleverest and the rich people don't always get the best things, do they? Food doesn't always come to the wise, wealth to the brilliant, favor to the learned. When I read this little bit, I can't help but think of one guy I went to high school with. He won absolutely every race. I've got to say, I was a little bit jealous of this guy. He was very fast. In primary school, I was the fastest guy, and I get to high school, and this guy beats me every single time. He was fast, but not just fast. He was top five student academically in our year. And not only that, he came from a very rich house. I used to go to his house. It was like a mansion. What happened to him? He was fast, clever, and rich. Well, he made some wrong decisions. Life dealt him a couple of curveballs. Things didn't go well for him. His mind just got a little unhitched as well. He got diagnosed with a mental illness and he killed himself. Very sad. You see, life under the sun, the Perth life, is actually awful. Nothing is guaranteed. No matter how good you are, no matter how rich you are, how quick you are, how wealthy, how learned, life under the sun is down to chance. It's random. That's how it looks. The gifted ones don't always reap the benefits. No one knows when their hour is going to come. For do you know when the next terrible thing is going to come on you? No. I remember the first time my kids caught their first salmon. We go down south a bit and we go fishing, and they caught their first salmon. They all caught it from the same rock, which was pretty cool, on the same day. I'm pretty sure. Maybe they caught it in different years. I can't actually remember. But they all caught a big salmon. It was fantastic. A brilliant moment, and took lots of photos. I'll show you later if you want to see me to prove it to you. Now, we didn't spare a thought for that. Those salmon, those poor fish, swimming along in this beautiful bay, and then bang, Kate catches one. Lucy, Sam. Then good old Dad has to take it off its hook and gut it and fillet it. One moment that fish is swimming along, the next moment it's in my pan with garlic and butter. No one knows when terrible things going to strike. You don't. That is life under the sun. All die in sin and chance rules. So let me ask you, is that your life? Are you just living the Perth life? Not sure about the future, knowing death is coming, but trying not to think about it, making the most of what you've got at the moment, because that's life, isn't it? Luck and chance might deal me a bad hand sooner or later, so I may as well enjoy it while I've got it. If that's you, then you're living without God, without the God who made you. You're under the sun. And in that world, all people die in sin, and chance rules. That is the world we know it, isn't it? It's a depressing line to the morgue. But there's another world, isn't there? There's another world where sin and death are defeated, where chance does not rule, where the God who made absolutely everything has intervened. Most of us know this world. We know the morgue is not the end. Dead bodies a breathed new life. Jesus Christ breaks into this world of death and chance and turns it on its head. So let's finish up. There's two massive things Jesus does and what they mean for us. Firstly, Jesus makes all people live. Under the sun, all people die in sin. Under Jesus Christ, in his world, all people live forever. We're going to look at Ephesians chapter 2. It's on the screen here. Well-known passage. This is Paul speaking to the Christians in Ephesus, and he's telling them, you guys used to be under the sun, but something's changed to you. Have a look. As for you, you were dead in your transgressions and sins in which you used to live when you followed the ways of this world, the ruler of the kingdom of the air, the spirit who is now at work in those who are disobedient. All of us lived among them at one time, gratifying the cravings of our flesh and following its desires and thoughts. Like the rest, we were by nature deserving of wrath. But God, who is rich in mercy because of his great love for us, did what? Made us alive with Christ, even when we were dead in transgressions. It's by grace you have been saved. We were dead in our sins. That is life under the sun. We must let that sink in. On our own, we are dead. You say, I've never felt dead, Matt. I don't feel dead now. Just give it time. It's a bit like a flower that's been cut off and put in a glass of water. It looks okay for a while, doesn't it? But actually, it's not attached to its life source at all. It's going to die. We are that flower. Left on our own, we look okay for a while, but we are dead because we're not attached to our life source. And guess what? Dead people can't make themselves live. If I went into the morgue at the hospital and started shouting at the dead bodies, hey, 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 wake up, live, what do you think would happen? Well, I get fired for one. And then they take me around the side to the mental ward. But did you see the two massive words that change everything? But God. But God has intervened. But God has cracked into our world. But God has broken through with mercy and makes dead people live. You see, when God sends Jesus, he cracks in to our world under the sun. What does Jesus do? He lives the perfect life. He dies for our sins on the cross, and he rises to new life. What does he do in that? Well, he defeats death. Death no longer has any power. Jesus makes dead people live because he dies their death, takes their punishment. And so we can be attached to our life source, can't we? Like the flower. What does the flour need in the glass of water? A bit more, put some sugar in there, or soft drink or something. No, it needs to be grafted back onto its life source. And that is what Jesus does with us. You see, people who have come to Jesus Christ and trust him are united to him in his death. And so, that little thing, alive with Christ when we were dead. You can be alive with Christ even though you were dead because he died and rose again. He deals with our death. He rises to new life. If I went into the morgue at Charlie Gardner Hospital and saw those dead corpses lying there and shouted, live, nothing would happen, obviously. Why not? Because I don't have the power. I haven't died for their sins. I haven't risen from the dead. But Jesus has. He's the only one who has the power to defeat death. Jesus makes all people live. Ecclesiastes says, time and chance rule our life, and death is devastating in life under the sun. But when Jesus comes, everything changes. In his world, all people live. And secondly, he rules everything forever. We're going to back up the truck here to Ephesians chapter 1. Just before chapter 2, Paul explains how this works. Now, Ecclesiastes 9 has ripped open our world. And that's what Ecclesiastes does. It just rips open our world. And if we leave the world ripped open, we get very depressed. It's ripped open our world of uncertainty and said, time and chance happens to us all. It's ripped open our world of death and said, the same destiny overtakes us all. But then Jesus says, no, that's not the end. Have a look at what God did. God raised Christ from the dead and seated him at the right hand in the heavenly realms, far above all rule and authority, power and dominion, and every name that is named, not only in the present age, also in the one to come. And God placed all things under his feet and appointed him to be the head over everything, for the church, which is his body, the fullness of him who fills everything in every way. So, what is this saying? God has raised Jesus from the dead and done what? Seated him at the right hand of the Father in the heavenly realms. What does that mean? Well, that's the powerful ruling position. That's the kingly position. And what is Jesus is far above all other rule, all other dominion, all other power, not only now, but forever, this age and the age to come. And God puts all things under his feet. Did you see that? And appointed him head over everything for the church. We'll talk about that line for the church in our growth groups. But here, the point is very clear. Jesus rules absolutely everything. And it reminds us of Psalm 8. What does Psalm 8 say? Talking about waiting for this king to come in the Old Testament. When is this guy going to come? Pointing to this guy. You have given him dominion over the works of your hand and have put everything under his feet. And when we hear that, what does that remind us of? Right at the beginning, God says, let us make man in our image, after our likeness. Let him have dominion, rule over the fish, over the birds, over the livestock, over all the earth. Jesus has rule over absolutely everything. See what this is saying? What Adam couldn't rule the world properly. What God's Old Testament people couldn't rule the world. What you and I can't do, Jesus does. He rules. How does he rule? With all authority and all power. You see the picture here. This is the hero of the story. This is the captain of the ship. All through the Bible, we're waiting for this guy to come. He's the leader we've always wanted. Every human leader will let us down, won't they? Adam let us down. David, King David, Moses, Abraham, Solomon, Trump, Morrison. They all let you down. And what feeling does that create in us when a human leader lets us down? There's no control here. You get it? When someone lets you down. That leader I thought was going to be the one you thought, no, this time, whether it's government, whether it's business, it's sport or church, you know that feeling when that leader lets you down? It's out of control. I thought Nat Fyfe was going to be the leader that the Dockers had to take us to the premiership. But it turns out Nat Fyfe can't even lead us to the finals, let alone to the premiership. Every human leader will let you down. And when that happens, how does it feel? It feels like no one's in control. Like chance rules everything. When every human leader lets us down, life feels like it's ruled by chance because they don't have the power. They don't have the dominion or the authority to rule. And then there's Jesus Christ, risen from the dead, above all, seated like a king of old, in control, at the right hand of the Creator, all things under his feet. And what if those feet that have everything under them are the same feet that hung on the cross? What if the feet that rule absolutely everything now are the same feet that hung there when your sin was being paid for? The King comes and dies. Those feet have everything under them. Those feet hung on the cross so that you can live. Jesus makes all people live, and Jesus rules everything forever. So let's finish up. What does this mean for us? If you're not a Christian, can you see the world we live in? Surely you don't want a world where death is devastating, where the weight hangs over you of death, where chance rules, where things just happen. Surely you don't want a world like that. That's scary and unpredictable. Turn to the risen King, Jesus Christ. Put your trust in him. Turn to the one who turns life on its head. Chance does not rule in the world Jesus rules. Death does not devastate because he has conquered it at the cross and the resurrection. Come to Jesus Christ. Talk to a Christian friend. Come talk to us at the info point. What's stopping you? If you are a Christian, here's the question for you. Which world are you actually living in? Which world? Are you saying you trust Jesus, but living as if death devastates and chance rules? Don't be deceived to living under the sun. Jesus has rescued you from that world and given you. He's transported you to a world of certainty and assurance, a world where he rules for your good and for his glory. If you've united yourself to Jesus Christ, then what happens to him happens to you. You are alive in Christ even though you are dead in sins. He is risen. You have risen. So here's the challenge for us. If you're a Christian, wake up each day, start tomorrow, and speak the word of Jesus to your own heart. Wake up and say, tell yourself, I have been rescued by Jesus from this world of sin and death. Death does not devastate me anymore. Tell yourself, I am living in a world where Jesus rules, not chance, not death. Speak the word of Jesus to yourself. Say, death does not devastate me. Chance does not rule me. Jesus has everything under his feet. He's got it all sorted. So I trust him. Tell yourself, the feet that have everything under them are the feet that died for my sins. He rules my world. Tell yourself. He is my Savior, King, and he has everything under his feet. The question for all of us this morning is this: which world are you living in? The world where sin and death devastate and chance rules? Or the world where sin and death are paid for, in full, and Jesus rules forever? One is a scary and unpredictable place. One gives you uncertainty and leads to death forever. The other is a secure and safe place that gives you certainty and assurance and leads to life forever. Two worlds, two views of death. Life under the sun, scary, unpredictable. In that world, all people die in sin, and chance rules, an uncertain life. But Jesus turns that world on its head. In his world, he pays the price in full. Sin and death do not devastate, and chance does not rule. He rules forever, for your good and for his glory.